Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 24th. I'm Ray Graff. It's an autumn edition of the Vox Pop Gardening Show, and we welcome our traditional trio of guests, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and world-famous Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They're here to answer your questions and make sure your yard looks great this fall, and your lard, but that's another show. The call is 800-348-2551 if you want to make it, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. To be clear, it's yard and not lard. It's coming up after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your fall lawn and garden questions, a few familiar and friendly voices. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington. And Fred Breglia is director of Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. If you have a gardening question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Tweet us if you want at WAMCVoxPop or email us if you wish at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
Yes, it is. Yeah, what a beautiful day.
Gorgeous. Yes. Gorgeous day out
there. And we've had some good news since last month.
What's that?
It rained.
We've been getting some adequate moisture here.
We got some decent rain. We were talking about last time how dry it was.
Yeah. We were worried. We were worried.
It was not looking that great with that kind of level of dryness at that time
of year. I know around here we got about 2.5 inches.
I think we got even more than that at our rate.
We were about that. Yeah.
Which is what we need.
Close to 3 inches.
But we need to keep getting it, too.
We do. Yeah. We got a little bit recently there, too.
A little bit coming, I think.
Yep. Oh, yeah, when?
Sunday,
I think. Sunday's a wet day.
Well, you sit inside, you watch the football game, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
it's kind of perfect because you're getting those in-between dry days.
Don't do that.
And then we're getting some rain again. So we're not getting it all at once. We're getting it
in the meantime, lots of gardening can happen between now and Sunday morning.
What a great day to get out there and do stuff. A
flurry of activity right now.
You know, you guys jumped into this so quickly. I wanted to, I heard Fred's picture was up in the post office. And I wanted to find out why. Brian Shields said, hey, you got to mention that Fred's picture's been festooning New York City. What's up with that?
Yeah, that is true, not a myth. I think most people that know me probably know I've been involved with looking for big trees for most of my life. A lot of different avenues I've participated in searching for giant trees, contests. We started co-founding organizations over the past. I was even instrumental in helping to write a law for New York State to protect big trees many years ago.
Yeah.
And all of this sort of led to the next thing that happened, which was I started a group on Facebook, which was called Big Tree Seekers. And the goal was kind of to link a number of big tree hunters, seekers together. And the group grew internationally very rapidly. And now it's probably the biggest coalition of big tree seekers around the globe. And Facebook actually contacted me, and they were interested in wanting to know whether I'd be interested in participating in a promotion to help push that big tree seeker title even further. And we said yes. We ended up in California for a photo shoot. That photo shoot ended up taking up a billboard in Times Square that's three city blocks long.
Wow.
We were down there a few weeks ago, and we did a tree planting event, and we planted 1,500 trees with people, some people's first time ever planting trees. We did that over the course of the weekend with another group called One Tree Planted. And we have about 37 of those trees that made their way up to Landis Arboretum.
I'm going to be planted back on there. Three blocks long.
Yeah, that's a big billboard.
You're a fairly thin fella.
Yeah, well, you ought to see the tree.
Oh, there was a tree involved. Oh.
There was a big tree involved.
This
a very
exciting.
Big tree. It was a Morton Bay fig that actually was shot on location in Southern California.
Wow. Now you're famous now. Did the limo drop you off for the show today?
Not today, but they did down in Times Square.
Are you friends with Zuckerberg now?
Yeah. I can't say too much on here.
Ah. Good, because they'll drag you up on Capitol Hill. All right, let's go to the emails first, and then we'll go to the phones. This one came in from Ann before the show started. Ann in Adams writes, thought I'd try to get a question in. for today's show before I head out of my car. All right, Ann, if you're listening in your car, stand by. The question is, I've made a compost pile this year, but when I dumped leaves in it, I freaked out, thinking I'm just making a giant tick farm. Am I? Is there something I can do to prevent making a nice place for them to breed? And that's from Ann in Adams.
I wouldn't worry about making a tick nest by composting leaves.
Yeah.
First off, composting leaves is, it's a great thing. You're going to end up getting those leaves to rot down. They're going to get really thick. You're going to turn your compost piles over.
What happens, too, is the old idea of compost is it heats up.
It heats up.
And you're not going to have much insect activity in that because it's going to get pretty warm. No, as long as you add some nitrogen source to that cellulose source.
You're probably, you're collecting a few ticks in the garden, possibly.
Might be getting rid of them.
Doing them in.
I heard that opossums really like ticks.
Oh, they're
number one,
of the best.
Number one critter out there taking out ticks.
That's great. Right.
It actually goes as far as to roll themselves in the leaf litter to help the ticks literally attach themselves to the possum, and the possum spends its evening just sitting there grooming itself, and it gets unbelievable amount of ticks. So yes, possums
apparently then digest the ticks, so that it's not just picking them off.
No, exactly. It sits there and just it becomes a food source.
Otherwise,
I forgot how many
some fowl, chickens, guinea hens.
Yep. Oh yeah, chickens
are also really good.
Decimate them as well, but possum number one.
All right, this is another email, and then we'll go on the phones. This is from Mary. I want to have an apple tree in my yard, a real apple tree, not a crab apple tree. What variety would you recommend? When is it best to plant? Where can I find one for sale? All of those from Mary.
Boy, it depends on what kind of apple you like, right?
That was going to be one of my first
Honey
comments.
Honeycrisp is
popular.
Very popular, easy to grow apple, disease resistant. However, you do need two apples, preferably two different varieties.
To cross pollinate.
So she should get a second one.
Usually the availability is best in the spring on those two. You won't find many now. I mean, if you find something that you like, you can plant it. It's a great time.
It's a great time.
But garden centers, pretty much it's a spring item. April, May, June. Yep.
That's counterintuitive for me because you'd think, okay, I have a little tree. I will plant it. Then the weather gets bad. How will it handle the winter?
Well, there's truth to that. It's an excellent time to plant.
Yep. And that's a really good question, by the way, because a lot of people actually get scared of planting in the fall for that particular reason. And leaves are falling off. I mean, how much action do you really have?
But
the truth of that is that there's a lot of action. The roots are establishing themselves right up until the ground starts to really freeze. Mm-hmm. So you've got the whole month of October when leaves are falling off. Roots are saying, I want to get established.
And they're in
November,
better shape for next year because when it gets hot, they already have roots.
That's it. And you're also not having to water those plants you're putting in late season for the most part. You water them in, it stays kind of cold. Yeah. Maybe you water them once or twice.
Generally, the inventory is less. There's less selection in the fall because we're all thinking winter is coming soon. We're not sure how many apple trees you're going to put in the ground.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Let's get to the phones. 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia, the famous Fred Breglia. Bob Graves and Greg Ward here. They're less famous, but they're still well known in their regions. Yeah. Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you're on.
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm having a good day today. I'm outside planting garlic.
Awesome.
Oh, good.
Perfect. Anyways, I have a question about using compost. Now, I do plant a lot of garlic, and I plant quite a few various vegetables. And I have 12-inch deep, 4.5-foot raised beds. Now, I have a whole lot of compost. I mean, lots and lots of it. And I screened it, and it's very clean. Now, my question is, if I were to remove all the existing soil in my boxes and replace them all with just the compost, would that be a disaster?
It sounds like a great thing, doesn't it? I mean, compost. We keep saying use compost, put in some more compost, and that's because
that's why I'm calling.
That's because compost is generally just part of your complete soil mix, a certain percentage, and compost breaks down. It disintegrates over time. It gets used up. It's absorbed, and so that's why you're adding more. But you still need the structure of the other elements, basically whatever comes in your topsoil, to properly drain.
Yep. Yeah, compost is organic matter. It's not soil.
No, exactly. And the mineral particles, we're really talking about is sand, silt, and clay. Those compositions come together to create a texture.
And that has a lot to do with how the roots can get established.
It
and
absolutely
the drainage
does.
And the air moving through. Pure compost sometimes can be like muck.
It absolutely is.
They affect the pH. They affect the trace element availability.
What would you say percentage-wise? A third-ish?
It's a typical average soil. In fact, I was just teaching soil classes, so I'm really up on the stats on this. A typical average healthy soil, 50% pore space, 50% solids. The pore space is about half of that 50%, so 25%. 25% is air and water. And of the solids, you're talking about 45% mineral, sand, silt, clay. And average soil has about 5% organic matter.
5%.
5% or typical average healthy forest soil.
And so when you're actually like trying to add compost to the soil, in that 20% range is hard to do. Most people won't put that much in.
Yeah.
But by putting that in or getting close to that and adding it, as we said before, it breaks down, it disappears. So,
and it's not putting it on the top. It's mixing it in.
That's right. Yeah. And we're not talking about the organic soils that we help build and keep putting compost in. When I say 5% organic, we're talking about normal forest soils.
Exactly.
But your garden soils should actually be much higher because, honestly, that's going to help you have more water holding, more nutrition holding.
Don't do it.
And
but Kerry, don't do the exactly.
Thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break here. It's the Gardening Show. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Numbers 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. The Gardening Show with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. And we jump over to line three. Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're up.
Hi. I'm calling about my Rose of Sharon.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. We're here.
Okay. It's on the curb, which means that it gets some abuse in the winter. And last winter, it got sufficient abuse to really make it, there was quite a bit of dead on it. In the spring, it's hard to tell how much of it is going to really be dead because it leafs out so late.
Right.
And finally, around Memorial Day or a little after, I did prune off all the dead stuff, but the thing looks fairly pathetic because it has so many other branches that are just not looking, they're sticking out every which.
Not a great place to put that plant. They're a little sensitive in this part of the world, and they can get hurt. They're going to get hurt by salt, freezing and thawing with the concrete around them. You're not going to know, guys, right, until next year how much of it's alive and how much is dead at this point.
And last winter, we had that strange sort of freeze-thaw events in January that did in a lot of evergreens. Well, you could put Rose of Sharon in the same group. There were several places where I think you should feel lucky because I saw several that did not make it at all. I saw actually quite a few that did perfectly fine as well. So it is, location does make a big difference with that plant. Age, so if you're going to leave it there, we were just talking about compost, about mulching under that tree or shrub would be a good idea. So making sure there's not too much lawn in the way. After that, if you think you're having it's close to the curb, there's going to be some salt in the snow, some kind of protection from that. A few stakes and some burlap is a kind of a traditional thing to do.
Yeah, and in terms of pruning that tree, shrub, your timing for the pruning is going to be in the springtime prior to the growth actually coming out, around the same time that the orchards are typically kind of pruning apples. A little bit later than that, you're going to be into Rose of Sharon, but generally that plant produces a shoot and then a flower bud and then flowers. So anything that you prune after that, it's not going to hurt it to prune it midsummer, but the ideal time for maximum flower would be spring prior to growth. So those are your two options.
And what she'd want to do is scratch. You can scratch the bark with your fingernail to see if it's green. And if it's green, it's alive. If it's brown, it's not.
All right.
Yep. And then otherwise, you know.
Then March or early April to prune it?
Yeah, kind of around that time. It's gonna be when buds are kind of just starting to swell up, but they haven't actually opened yet. With that plant, it's a late opener, so you kind of get a little bit extra time. And if you do actually miss it, and you're not sure which ones are alive, and I really want to just kind of get my shape of this thing back together, you can prune that thing in midsummer. The only thing is you lose flowers. But
of course,
but then
in midsummer, if you see the leaves are on it, there's some branches that don't have leaves.
Exactly. So that might be a clearer time to kind of work on that, especially if you're trying to reshape it and you're not really that confident. So.
Okay.
Okay, Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Over to Kathy in Seward. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. I have a small bed of daylilies. And so I don't mow there, and I got volunteer maple trees coming up there. There are like three of them, but they're very close together. And it's right near my house, so I only want one. And, you know, I think that they're separate trees. Do maples ever come up like with three?
Well, only if you pruned it last year, you know.
Oh, I haven't pruned it at all. It's just
it's probably three.
Probably three trees.
So how do I choose which one to leave?
You choose the straightest one.
Pretty much equal.
Or the prettiest one.
Yeah, whichever looks best to you, and just remove the others.
Yeah, maybe the largest, potentially. If the largest means you can still move it, it sounds like it's kind of small.
Yeah, they're about 4 feet high and maybe as thick as a finger.
Okay, yeah, so no problem. That's going to move really, really, really easy. I always tell people, though, if you really want to get one, it might not be a bad idea saving two. Just in case something happens with the one, you've got your backup, so maybe move two.
Are you thinking about leaving it there or moving it somewhere else?
She's talking move it.
No. I want to leave one right there.
Okay. Oh.
So if you are going to get the other ones out because you want to, just have one tree—
Right.
They're going to have a bit of a taproot, and so you will need to dig down maybe with some kind of implement of destruction, shovel or, spading fork to sort of find, to sort of work the root out. You probably, if you cut it about, 7 or 8 inches down below the soil line, it probably would not resprout. But if you cut it close to the soil line, you might see them again next year.
Okay.
All right. One more question. If I dig down to remove the ones I don't. I mean, they're very close together. Am I going to harm the one I leave by digging down to the roots of the others?
Not really. No, I mean, you want to be careful while you're doing that, but and not damage severely the taproot of the one you like. But no, you should be able to do that.
Yep. All right, then. Kathy, thank you very much. 800-348-2551, the number. Gardening Today. Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia here with you, and Judy in Palmer, Massachusetts. Judy, you're on.
Hi. I have bought some perennials. They're actually all peonies. Got a really good price on them, but I'm not ready to put them in their permanent place. So can I just heal them in? What special things do I have to do if I just heal them in for the winter?
So you want to keep
them? I'm
going to
put them in where the vegetables are.
Yeah. So you could just plant them in the vegetable garden, as is. Take them out of the pot, slip them into the vegetable garden at the same level that they are in the pot, and you're done.
Okay. Can I put the pot in the soil, or should I take it out of the pot?
If you're planning to move it,
I am going
to
move
Then actually, it would be better to probably plant it with the container and all. Because once a peony starts to grow, you're not going to want to move that until later in the summer.
Right.
So I've held a lot of plants. In fact, even at the Arboretum right now, our holding bed is filled with plants that are getting installed in the containers because those are going to get yanked out and end up going for sale in a spring sale. It works really, really well. Just plant them top of the pot, little mulch on top, water them in.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
Yep, you got it.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Gardening Today on the program. And Paul in Clifton Park is next. Paul.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I've got a question about my lawn here in Clifton Park. The soil is very sandy in Clifton Park.
Yeah, it is.
So there's not much in it. So I want to add a winterizer fertilizer.
Yep.
But I also want to seed this fall. So in the spring, the seed comes up and makes new grass.
Yep.
Can I do them both at the same time?
Sure. I grew up up there, and some of that ground is, you're right, really sandy. A winterizing fertilizer, though, is defined by the temperature at which you put it down, not the product.
Huh.
So if you technically want to do a winterizer, and we're close enough now, it doesn't matter too much. You usually do it after the lawn has stopped growing, which might be another week or two, but you're pretty close. But, yeah, I would go ahead and seed it. What you may not be able to do is you may not be able to use your crabgrass preventer if you want to next year because your seed won't have germinated. But I would sure seed it now and fertilize it, absolutely.
Okay, good. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. And we're moving quickly today. Amazing. 800-348-2551, the number. Kurt in Stuyvesant. Kurt.
Hi. I have a question about two Norway spruces. They're about 90 years old. And just to give you an idea, I live in it's a peninsula within the Hudson River, so it's basically wetlands. I 2 years ago had to have my house elevated 10 feet. Then the trees are about 20 feet from the house at most. So there's underneath the house was entirely filled in, like with 4 feet of gravel. And the driveway is next to the house, and because of the construction and all, fill spilled between the driveway and the tree and leaned, onto the bark of the tree for a whole season. And since then, the trees have been turning brown, and I removed all that dirt. Are they going to survive?
Well, you probably have a combination of lots of things that were done when that construction was done. The soil up against the tree may only have been part of that problem. The roots of those trees are going to grow out to two times the canopy spread minimum at a 90-year-old spruce. You're talking two times the canopy spread, probably closer to three times the canopy spread.
Wow.
And anytime you have compaction or heavy equipment or any kind of grading occurring in that two times the canopy zone, if you're beyond the three times the canopy zone, once you're out double the canopy, you're going to be okay. But my guess is that they probably went closer than two times the canopy spread, in which case...
Yeah, if they got something up against the bark, there's a lot of soil.
Yeah.
The house itself is closer than that. So,
okay, so...
Yeah.
Well,
it's one of the surest ways to kill a tree is to raise the grade around it.
Yep. Or even compress the soil to a heavy degree with heavy equipment, and the fact that you're noticing this happen 1 year after the incident is even... is not good news, only because typical construction damage takes about 3 years to show up on a tree, and only in very severe cases do you see major decline in a year or less.
So any possible remedies?
One is way worse than the other, and the other thing is that there are beavers here, and occasionally they dam. There's like sometimes 18 inches extra water.
Oh boy, you got multiple stresses there.
Yeah, the fact that they made it 90 years tells me that the even if they're not exactly 90, they're big spruce trees, and the fact that they made it that long in your yard tells me that the site's pretty good for them up to the point where they get modified. But some things really quickly just to think about in terms of rectifying this or mitigating it to some degree is if the soil has been raised up, as we've said here, you really can't go over 3 inches, Ed. So if there's a spot around that root zone that's over 3 inches and you're not able to actually like scrape that away, which I don't think is going to be the best case anyways, the only other option would be to start to put aeration type channels in that root zone. And they do that with using augers and, usually a couple of inch wide auger bits. And we go down about 18 inches and those channels are often filled with lots of different things. But in your case, it would be lots of like perlite.
Water. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would need perlite in there probably, which would be that stuff that they use in potting soils to increase drainage and airflow. And what you're doing is just drilling holes and dumping some perlite
and
creating
really
air
the
channels.
Air.
It's an air issue.
What happens when you change the grade around trees is the percentage of atmospheric gases at a distance down into the ground changes, and the whole ecology of the soil
gets
messed up.
And whether that's from adding too much stuff on top or compressing it, you're kind of ending up in the same type of degree. You need to increase the aeration to help get that root system to flow. Everybody knows, most people know that trees, take carbon dioxide and give us oxygen, but during respiration, the trees actually take in oxygen and release carbon dioxide, and that carbon dioxide has to get out of that soil profile through little pores. And if that's all compressed or blocked, then you're going to have a non-functioning root system and therefore not a good-looking treetop.
All right, Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551.
The only thing I'd say is if he may want to refer to a certified arborist to try to give
That's
him some ongoing
instruction
to try to see if we can say that.
Consultation.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But certified arborist would be the way to go.
Okay, Don in New Baltimore. Don, you're on.
Yes, hi. My question is, my wife's garden this year, I did not do a good job of weeding, and it has lots of thick weeds in it. I'm getting ready to put the garden down for the winter. I read online that I should be taking out, I should be digging out the root system of the weeds. Is that true? Because it's a lot of work.
yeah, the short answer is that, yeah, that's kind of true. Yeah. You're going to plant there next year, and you know, these might be a lot of annuals, but you're going to have to deal with them at some point. The other thing you could consider is cutting them down. If it rained quite a bit last week, but if your soil is workable and then you want to just sort of loosen it up and rake out whatever is sort of obvious after that, that would suffice as well.
Yeah, you could also consider smothering it, like with a weed fabric or even a black plastic. But I personally like weed fabric. At least I don't like weed. I don't like weed fabric. It's not great. But there's applications where it's usable, and smothering for a garden space works well. It lets water, air in. It kills everything on the top. You would take that weed fabric off, a few weeks before you're ready to plant.
Yeah, it's just that things are dead now, and there's stuff in the way.
True.
So you can't. You're going to have to do it sometime. If you cut everything
down,
and then ignore the base, those bases will be more pliable and probably a little looser in the spring. You could consider that. So putting it off till spring, but taking the tops out so that you can otherwise, winterize it. You can get some leaves in there, a little compost in there, all of which you might work in. If it's no-till, yeah, you should probably get it out of there.
Yeah, and my wife does a lot of perennial gardens. She always says, the better you put a bed the better you can put a garden to bed for the winter. The better your results are going to be in the spring.
Yeah, and so if you're rototilling, cut it. If they're tall weeds, they can kind of bind up the rototiller a little bit. So pulling or cutting all that out, raking that out, and then tilling in the bases would be fine right now.
Yep.
Hey, okay. Thank you very much.
Hey Don, one thing: if it's your wife's garden and you're doing the weeding, I would suggest you go for partial custody on that.
Well, thanks a lot. Have a good
day. All right, thanks. I'm not an attorney, but 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Frank in North Chatham. Hello, Frank.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you very much. I have about 8 Norwegian maples, and I assume they're Norwegian. In the fall, they turn a brilliant yellow. And now they've been in the ground maybe 18, 20 years. The trunk is probably 18, 20 inches, and they're starting to die from the top down.
Okay. Well, that's not good, first off, because trees don't typically die from the top down unless there's a problem. And most likely you've got some kind of root issue going on that's creating that that type of decline. The things that we're looking for on these is girdling roots, strangling roots, or trees that are planted too deep, or some combination of those three things. I would almost guarantee
all of the trees are doing this the same. They're all showing decline.
They're along the side of my driveway, and they're huge, big canopies. And when you talk about the roots, does that mean that the roots are crossing over each other and squeezing?
No, it's not the crossing over of the roots that you're worried about. It's the roots wrapping themselves back around their own trunks. Think of like giving yourself a headlock. That's kind of what can happen with some of these plants. And Norway maples are one that you can kind of see. You see that with quite a bit. You're going to know the diagnostic here is going to be that you're going to go outside and look at your trees, and you're going to see the trunks. And the trunks, my guess, are going to look like they're going more or less straight into the ground without a noticeable root flare at ground level. When I say root flare, I'm talking about the place where the trunk and the roots meet at ground level should be a real pronounced flare. My gut feeling is that you're going to see
somebody come in and look at that, they can tell.
Yeah, yeah, it would be very obvious.
You can tell.
I could diagnose it from without getting out of a car.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see that trunk going straight into the ground, and that automatically is a red flag. So if you tell me that that's not the case, then I would give you more additional information.
Could be fungal.
And it could be physical damage. We didn't really ask you if you've done any recent trenching for drainage, for pipes, for the driveway.
No, nothing. They've been there for 18, 20 years. Yep. But I was wondering, is there anything I can do to save them?
We would have to accurately diagnose the cause of the problem. But if it was the circling roots, it would sort of depend on how severe it was and how much, you were willing to invest in trying to save these trees. And
somebody
some
could come in and cut them if they knew what they were
doing. Yeah, they could be cut. They have tools called their air spades. They actually blow the soil away from the root systems without injuring the roots with compressed air. And I've used those over the numerous times over the years, and it works really, really well, but it's not a cheap piece of equipment. It may not be that bad of a thing. It might have varying degrees, but I would say you probably want to get a hold of a certified arborist to come in there and have a consultation done. If you wanted to just show me some photos of these trees, like at ground level, where the trunk and the roots meet, you could forward those to my email, fred@landisarboretum.org, fred@landisarboretum.org, and I'd be happy to give you my opinion. If it is a situation that has improper depth or bad root girdling, I should be able to spot that from some good photos and at least give you some more advice and give you some direction to go on.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for the call. And if you do email Fred, be properly reverential. His visage is on huge billboards in New York City. He's very famous.
I don't know. I'd have been scared if I walked down Times Square and saw that picture up there.
Yes.
Well, some of the other characters are in there. Yeah, Take a little bit of the heat away from me. Exactly. Yeah. This is the big tree business we're
talking
about.
Good reason to stay home. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Greg Ward, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia are here. It's the gardening show. Is this the last one of the season, or we have one more?
No, I think we're gone year-round now.
Are we really?
Year-round.
I think that's wise, because we do the one in the midwinter, and it's very popular.
It is.
Did you see Ray's face light up?
I know. We're going
to
be back.
He loves to see us come.
We're going to come back.
It fills an hour, right?
This is an easy hour for him.
You ain't whistling Dixie there. Bob. This email came in from Deborah in Altamont. Hi, last summer I planted tons of dahlia tubers in my raised bed. Geez, I think I went out with a dahlia tuber once. She was a fun. all types of varieties, and they grew the tiniest flowers. What did I do wrong? What should I do to grow dahlias?
They may have produced too many shoots. It's really easy for a dahlia to put out a lot of, they have a lot of eyes, so you get a lot of shoots coming out of the ground. And then they compete with each other and therefore sort of stunt themselves. And that's why I would think the flowers would be small if they weren't otherwise not supposed to be small. I mean, there are dahlias she could have got that have small flowers. But if they didn't look right, then think about how many stems were actually coming out of the soil. And usually if you're planting traditional border dahlias, you're thinning them down to three stems, four stems. You know, if you have five or six or more, that's too many.
So would you divide them when you dug them up this fall too? Is that part of the issue or in the spring?
It can come from a relatively small size.
Can.
It's more about the way in which it sprouts, the number of shoots you get, and then you just go in and thin them.
Just thin them like you thin anything else.
Yeah, you just cut every other one out, and it works quite nicely.
This one is from Matt in Connecticut. I planted a small dogwood tree a couple of years ago. It's doing great, but should I cut the low branches off close to the ground so it will look more like a tree?
Low branch removal is an aesthetic question. So if for him
it's going to look
better and more tree-like by removing some of the lower branches, and it might even help with some of the maintenance. I don't know if this is around a yard where he's going to mow as the tree gets bigger. A lot of times people do what we call a crown raise, which is just removal of the lower
branches. There's a rule about how much far to go every at a sitting or at a pruning.
Yeah, usually, yeah. Generally, you don't want to take more than 30% off. And remember, the branches that are coming out at whatever feet they are, a lot of people don't realize, you know, that as the tree gets taller, the branches actually stay exactly.
Yeah, they don't raise.
They don't raise with the tree. Oh. So the branch would theoretically always be there. So if it's at 3 feet and he doesn't really, you know,
be a little careful because dogwoods don't like to be pruned heavily at any one time.
That's true. Either. Yep. Yep. 25%, 30% maximum. And I wouldn't prune them right now either. I would tend to wait until it's springtime or something like that.
It can be an early spring pruning.
It can be.
Be a March, April.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We go to David in Saugerties. David, you're on.
Hello. Can we talk about lilacs?
Sure.
I have a couple of lilac trees. One's pretty tall, about 25, 30 feet high. And there's a patch of, like, about maybe 3 feet away from them that popped up over the past year or so of smaller shoots. And it did not flower very much this past year. So I know, based on some of the YouTube things that I've seen, that it definitely needs some pruning. But I'm just not clear on when to prune it. There seems to be a back and forth on that. And how much to prune it.
So we'd like to know what kind of lilac. So you said 25 or 30 feet, and that's really big for a typical common lilac. So what color are the flowers when they did bloom?
They are like a purplish.
It's not Syringa reticulata.
It's probably not 25 feet tall.
No.
Maybe 15, maybe 20.
You're talking about a stem cane on there, or like a trunk section. You're talking about like a 6-inch wide trunk on the tall ones, correct?
Yeah, trunk.
And many
of them.
So that's
big Syringa reticulata, or a big Syringa vulgaris.
That thing is old.
That's big. Old. That's old growth. That might actually be qualifying
and
for big
pruning
tree
is going to be really important to get that to the point where it's going to do well for you.
Yep. There's a few options with those really overgrown old lilacs. You could have, you're really two options. You're when you prune a lilac, to answer your first question, it's always after it blooms. So that's the traditional time you would do routine maintenance of your lilac.
Right.
But when you have these gigantic overgrown lilacs, and I don't know, do you have a lot of sprouts coming up around those big, big canes? Or do you just have some really big canes?
There are the big canes, the trunks that are, I'd say, probably more like four inches at the biggest, maybe six. And then in between them, there's interspersed some shoots, some skinnier ones. And then about 3 feet away, there's a whole patch of them coming up.
All right. So what you're going to try to attempt to do is going to try to replace those really big stalks with smaller stalks. So the rule is about 30% or so of the biggest ones get removed every year, and we encourage the next cluster of small shoots to kind of replace them.
Not every year, but as necessary.
As necessary, yeah. It might be every handful of years, depending.
It's going to seem pretty drastic because you got big diameter branches there, but they need to come out, at least some of them.
Yep. So that would be the way that we would proceed. Now, the way to and if you wanted to cut those canes down, you could cut those canes theoretically when the buds begin to swell, but they haven't actually grown yet. So it's a little bit different timing than what we would tell you for normal lilac pruning. And the reason why is there's so much stored energy in those canes. We want that energy to go back into the root systems. So when you see the buds, they're just starting to swell, but they haven't opened yet. That means the energy is mostly in the root system. And if you cut those big canes right then and there, most of the energy is preserved in the root system, which means the regrowth is going to be quite phenomenal in a good way. And then you'll have to do a lot of selective thinning after
March,
that to get these back.
March, early April.
Yeah, something like that, just before they open up and grow. And they also, if you burn wood, the big lilac canes, you don't get them very often, but boy, that is some really good wood right there. They're super hot burning. Mm. It's just not very often that you get big lilac.
You guys say that was an old one. How old do you think it was?
That could be 50 100? Years, 60 oh, yeah. years, 70 oh, years.
It's yeah. not 20 yeah. years old.
No, it takes a long, long time.
All right, to line number 9, and Jim in Poughkeepsie. Jim, you're on. Hello, Jim. You've waited 23 and a half minutes. Are you there?
Jim.
Oh, goodbye, Jim. I'm sorry. Lisa in Pittsfield. Lisa.
Hi, thanks for talking gardening with us. I have a ginkgo biloba tree, autumn gold, and for some reason it never turns gold. The leaves fall off when they're green. So they haven't fallen off yet. They're still green, but there's other trees around in Pittsfield that I've seen, and they are just bright yellow, beautiful. All their leaves are still on, and they're yellow. Mine are green, and then they just fall off green.
And this is
any ideas?
Years and years in a row, it's always green.
Yeah, well, I've probably had it for 4 years, and for 4 years in a row.
So it's a tree you planted 4 years ago.
I had planted, yes.
Had planted, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I think you definitely don't have to give up yet. It may still just be kind of settling into the location. Cold weather, those frosts, that come to make the leaves turn is really the trigger for that. And it may be small enough and in a protected enough corner that it's not really seeing that cold weather and until we get a really good cold one. So it's still more active, if it's still green right now, than those ones you see that are gold because they've been more exposed. So that's my...
There's really nothing you can do about it. No. It's either going to happen or not.
Yeah, my gut feeling is it will start
eventually.
To turn more. I mean, it might not be as gold as some of the other ones because it's site conditions, but I think it's going to...
As it gets larger, that it will... Yeah. The site conditions will change as well.
Yeah. Yep. So have patience with it. But that's good news. If you're actually still, if it's showing a lot of vigor, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. That's actually means you're
good. No, it seems to be healthy.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Lisa. Now to Steve in Gansevoort. Steve, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks. So we've got some raised beds, and this year had four cantaloupe plants that grew very nicely. We haven't had luck with them in the past. Ended up with about 35 fruit, which unfortunately all had to be thrown out because powdery mildew damaged the plant before they ripened.
Yeah.
It's a compact raised bed system with several other beds. And this year we put black plastic over it and left it there with just large holes cut out for the plants to try to suppress weed growth. We're thinking maybe we just need to give it more space so there's more airflow in order to avoid the powdery mildew. But do you think the black plastic is also playing a role?
Short answer, no. All of those things are ideal for melons. It's a short season for us, and melons, they need every warm day you can get. What we did have was a tremendously humid situation from April right through July and into August.
I noticed.
It didn't really get, we talked about drought before, but it didn't really get air dry until late August.
I talked to a lot of farmers who squash, pumpkins, melons. They had tremendous failures this year because of powdery mildew.
Yeah, it was a big year for
just because it was wet. It's
fungal
weather.
Yep.
So just trying again next year, rotate, don't use the same bed. Try to, rotate the plants around. You put the melons in a different one. But black plastic is not a bad idea because it warms up the soil. Now, raised beds, the soil is going to be a little warmer anyway. But I still think you can do that if you like.
There are some organic fungicides that you could try too, but you need to do it before you see the problem.
Yep.
Multiple times.
Yeah. And one little trick with powdery mildew is, although the humidity definitely is not helping our situation, the fact that we don't get some rain sometimes actually hurts, helps the powdery mildew.
Hmm.
And that's because sometimes that forceful rain, and there was a point where it was so humid, but we didn't get rain it was a drought period. And a lot of times if you get your garden hose, and we always tell people don't water above overhead irrigation because that's going to create more problems. But every once in a while, it rains. And then it washes off those leaves. So if you were to mimic that during a time when there was no rain and forcefully with your garden hose blast off the leaves, a lot of the spores actually get washed off. And it is a way that might reduce the amount.
A couple of powdery mildew kind of home remedy organic cures are chamomile tea.
What?
Yep, chamomile tea. Compost
works.
Tea.
Compost tea.
Which I think is your
delicious
favorite, right?
Delicious, that's very good. A little honey.
It didn't work, though. I drank a lot of chamomile tea.
Well.
And he didn't see any.
Next time. Give it to the plant.
Okay. But you might have been a little bit better at sleeping.
Yeah.
In the evenings.
All right. And then, you weren't worried about it so much.
And baking soda is another.
Baking soda is not bad.
That's another one.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, that was fun. 800-348-2551, the number. We go to Ann in Wappingers Falls. Hello, Ann.
Oh, hi. I have a question about my Shasta daisies. Are they supposed to be deadheaded?
Well, if they, you know, they come up and bloom great, you know, early July, they look amazing. And then it's the middle of August and you have all those sort of blackish brown heads there. I would definitely cut them then. They will, you know, regrow some new leaves. You'll get a few more flowers. You'll get a light bloom for late August, September, if that's what you're referring to. If you're referring to right now, yes, cut them all down now.
No, I've cut them down for now. But during the summer when they grow, they only seem to last about a week and then they're done.
There's a few different varieties that the strongest one, I mean, there's a lot of newer ones, but that strongest one called Becky Shasta tends to have a very long bloom, you know, I'm going to say 3-4 week bloom. There are plants that bloom longer, but it won't respond, I don't think, well to sort of deadheading to have it keep blooming. It's sort of a one big show. You take it down and then you get a little show after that.
Yeah, it's right. Just the nature of the plant.
And thank you very much. And to Marilyn in Lakeview, Connecticut. Marilyn, you're on.
Thanks. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question here about trees. We own a field right across from our street. It's probably about maybe 250 feet long by maybe 100 feet wide, something like that. Nice oblong. And right now, that field is just wild grasses and, you know, natural things, right? And it gets mowed a couple times a year. And I'm starting to think, gee, we should do our part for the earth and sink some carbon here and plant some trees over there. So my question is, what kinds of trees do the best, not only in terms of being healthy, but also in terms of sinking more carbon in this area?
Okay.
Well, first off, having a meadow is not necessarily bad for the environment either. You're doing a great thing for pollinators when you do that. And there's a certain amount of carbon sequestration that occurs even with grass or weeds or brush.
The fact that you're not cutting it, you know, more than just once a year, you're letting it be a meadow is certainly helpful.
You could put some trees in.
Yep. Another way to look at it would be if you looked around the yard, around this field, you're going to probably have a whole bunch of trees that are coming up around it. And those trees are all geared towards that site. They're all going to work. And they're probably predominantly all native. You know, that is speculation on my part.
Okay. Silky dogwood and that kind of stuff.
Yep. And then also another option, which I've, you know, said to folks, and we even do it at the Arboretum, you know, as needed, is you let that field, instead of mowing it, you let it go for a year.
Yeah.
And you don't mow it at all, so it's less work for you. And then now you're going to start to see what's naturally going to come up in that field as a woody plant.
Yep.
And, you know, you could certainly spend a ton of time researching natives and putting plants in. But honestly, if it's a field like that and you want to come back to something new, so I would just let it grow for a few years. I wouldn't do too much with it. And then after a couple of years, you're going to be able to still easily brush hog it. So, and then you can selectively go around. You might want to hire someone like an arborist or potentially a horticulturist of some sort that knows the identification of these plants well. And they can walk around with a little roll of flagging tape and you can flag out all kinds of natives. And then you can do selective brush hogging around the things that you chose to leave.
It'll
actually be quite nice.
And so basically, lethargy works really well in this case.
It does if you're willing, you know, just give it a few years.
Something I can get on board with.
It requires patience.
Yeah.
So that's where I fail a lot of times.
Yeah, it also requires my stopping worrying about what the neighbors think about this straggly-looking autograph.
Good for you, Marilyn.
but if you have
neighbors.
A good plan.
But
you have
a good explanation.
I was going to say, you got a really good answer for this one. So.
Just tell them the famous Fred Breglia said to
you. There you go.
Support comes from the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated for over 50 years with indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, bird feeders and seeds, organic fertilizer and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. And Curtis Lumber, announcing their new kitchen showrooms featuring kitchen design trends and cabinets from Wellborn at Merillat and quartz countertops from Cambria, CurtisLumber.com. Well, thanks again to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward for being here today. Thank you for listening. Great calls. And again, we left the lines loaded. Apologies. Fred tells me we're going to do this show all year round now, so they'll be back again next month. Save those thoughts. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we taste and discuss Halloween treats with Uncle Sam's candy and Krause's homemade candy. So, children, get your insulin ready. It's going to be a fun show. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.